C'est final.
Yes, that's me. And my psychic and former British number one, Mr. John Lloyd. And this week on Rock and Roll Tennis, of course, we've got two very special guests. And I have to say that I am very excited to speak to them because being a Brit, we don't have college sports like they do in the States. You've got obviously the huge sport. I think it's bigger than pro sport and certainly in pro football. College basketball is massive. Well, we've got the two guys who run college tennis. Let me introduce them. We have Timothy Russell, the CEO of the Intercollegiate Tennis Association. And we've got John Vergosen, who's the chairman of the board. And let me tell you this, he's the past president of the USTA. Effectively, he was, I guess, the most powerful man in American tennis. Is that fair to say, John?
Oh, I think some of our players are more powerful.
Well, listen, we could talk about the USTA at the moment, what with the announcement the other day. We want to talk a bit about college tennis. A few weeks ago, I don't know if you heard, we had a guy, almost a professional tennis player. He's now a very hot prospect in the cruiserweight division in boxing, a guy called Jordan Thompson, English guy. And John Lloyd, of course. He said it's a shame he didn't go through the college system because it would have been ideal for him. I mean, first of all, how does the college system work? How do you pick players? How do you select the teams? Just give us a little bit of an outline.
Well, if you don't mind, could I start with a slightly different question, which is just to give you a little bit of an overview about the ITA and then hand it off to Tim to really give you the details because he really runs things day to day. But just to put it in historical perspective, when I played college tennis back at Northwestern 50 years ago, we really only had one season, and that was the spring. And then in the fall, we just practiced outside for a couple of months, but there were no competitions with other schools and no tournaments. And then in the winter, it was the same kind of situation, but the practices were very few and far between. We pretty much practiced with one another, but it was usually late at night on a hardwood floor of the basketball court. And the only tournament that we had was the Big Ten Championships, and which was a conference championships. And if you were lucky, you got to go to the NCAA Championships. Now, fast forward to today, it's a whole different world of college tennis. It's an incredibly rich experience with exciting tournaments, fierce competition, awards for players and coaches, a summer circuit where college players and junior players get to play with one another, community service month, kids' days, campus showdowns, and a governing body, the ITA, that is the watchdog and conscience of college tennis. And it was through the vision of our former executive director, David Benjamin, who spent nearly 40 years transforming college tennis. And for the past 5 years, CEO Tim Russell and his team have taken the ITA and college tennis to the next level. So I think with that predicate, I'll let Tim answer your question. But I thought it was important for your viewers and listeners who don't really know about the ITA to set that backdrop.
Hey, thanks, John, and thanks for your service to our sport. And Keith and John, it's great to be with you. So the ITA is the governing body of college tennis, actually serves 1,200 schools, 1,700 programs, five divisions. So that's NCAA Division I, II, III, what's called NAIA, and then junior college. So we have about 3,000 coaches and about 20,000 student athletes. So you had asked how it was organized, and then you asked about how the teams were selected. So all of the coaches in respective schools are responsible for recruiting their own teams. So one of the things that's happening nowadays, especially if people are following things like universal tennis rating, is that each of these divisions has a different level of players, and there's a fierce competition just to get the players to come to their schools. First and foremost, I mean, college tennis is ultimately about higher education. while it is a pathway to the pros, and you can think about the days of McEnroe or Connors playing and now Isner and Danielle Collins, almost all of the students are ultimately going to college and playing tennis, but they're there to get an education. So there's a lot of opportunity. It's a global sport. People coming from all over the world, including Great Britain. We think there's about 110 men and about 98 women from the United Kingdom. And the fact of the matter is college tennis is strong.
Yeah.
I mean, John has spoken very highly of it, haven't you, John? John Lloyd, I'm talking about, of course.
Yeah, well, I've always been a big fan of American college tennis because I think it does so many things. I mean, the education, obviously, is critical. And I think, you know, as players, I mean, you grow up. I mean, I was one of the biggest idiots of all of that at school. You know, I went to a decent school and I had teachers saying, listen, you know, I know you want to be a pro tennis player, but what if? What if it doesn't happen? What are you going to fall back on? And I was arrogant to think, well, that's not going to happen. I'm going to make it. But the odds were so slim. And my education, I left at 15 and a half, 16 and turned pro right away. And I got lucky. I was very fortunate. I had a bad injury and got away with it. Almost had to stop at 17 years old with an injury that possibly could have ended it before I even started. I would have had no education, no certificates, no anything. I would have struggled big time. American college, you get a great education, but I think it's such a good learning process to be a pro tennis player as well. I think there are exceptional tennis players that come up, and we know the young ones that we're talking about that you know are going to make it. You know it unless there was an injury. So perhaps, you know, the need for them to go to college, they're already making big money at 16, 17. Okay, they can maybe get away with it. But the vast majority of players are not in that position. And to have a college education and to learn your ropes by going to college and playing and the pressure that goes on in these matches, I think is quite amazing. You know, it teaches you how to play in big pressure situations. You learn your craft. I've seen so many players and parents pushing their children at 17, 18 out on the tour, and they're not ready. And they get beaten up week after week playing tournaments. And then by the time they're 19 or 20, they've got no more confidence in themselves. You know, they were thrown out to the wolves too quick. And tennis is a tough sport. There's a lot of hungry people out there. And I think American college just gets you into such a good a background of learning your craft in pressure situations and then coming out. By the time you come out, there's no rush. People think there's a rush. Exactly what you said, Keith. These days, you can play tennis till you're in your late 30s. There's no rush in getting out there. Another couple of years, two or three years, won't do you any harm whatsoever. And I always recommend American college to players when they talk to me, young players.
Yeah, the two of you, John and Keith, have the calculus correct. I mean, the average age of the top 100 is getting higher, not just Federer at his age, but I mean, I think the average age is 27 or 28. And I did a study once that showed that from the time you turn pro to if you get into the top 100, and that's not a guarantee, is 4 or 5 years. So if you do the math, you graduate college at 22, you have 5 years to 27. And to John Lloyd's point, you're playing for a cause. And I think the pressure is much greater than saying, oh, I'm going to Thailand to play in a futures. And I think a lot of people also nowadays with the game having gotten so physical, they need more time to get physically strong, but also mentally and emotionally strong. I think there's very few people who probably should go directly to the tour. Maybe if you're Riley Opelka or something with 150 mile an hour serve. But even Riley was thinking of going to USC and working with Peter Smith, who, you know, had coached Stevie Johnson. But I think the calculus shows that you're not only aging properly, but you're getting a lot of things paid for. You're getting not only paid for your education, the coaching. Now the top schools have physical trainers, strength conditioners, mental trainers, nutritionists. You're getting about, we've calculated about $250,000 a year by the time you add this all up, which you're not having to pay for yourself. And you're still having time to play tour events, whether it's in November, December, January before school. So I think college tennis truly is a great pathway to the pros.
Can I ask John Vergosen, because obviously you were president of the USTA, how popular, I mean, you can both answer this, but how popular is intercollegiate tennis? Because as I mentioned at the start, the pro college football, they get bigger crowds. I think it's more popular than the NFL. And I think that the college basketball is also huge. How popular is it, college tennis?
Well, in terms of football and basketball, those are some pretty good revenue generators for the schools and for the NCAA. You're not going to get that kind of turnout. But nevertheless, tennis is still very popular. You could go to a match at, say, the University of Georgia, and you get 5,000 people in the stands. Or some of the Division I's, you'll get 1,000 people. Maybe a Division III, you may not have as many. And part of that is up to the school and the coaches. But I will tell you that there is nothing more thrilling than a college tennis match. Two teams going crazy against each other. It's 3-all, and it comes down to, you know, a final singles match that's in the third set. People are on the edge of their seats. And so it's just an incredible experience. And as you have all said, I really do think it's important to go to college. Remember, it's student athlete. It's not athlete student. And so I think it's important to get both. In the old days, the way it worked was, when I say the older days, back in the late 80s, early 90s, the likes of Sampras and Courier and Agassi, those guys basically went right to the pros. And the USTA encouraged it back then. Now the USTA doesn't as much. It sees the value of college tennis, and it's working closely with the ITA because of the maturation levels that you need to have today, both physically and mentally and emotionally. You could take, for example, James Blake and Todd Martin. James went to Harvard for 2 years. Todd went to Tim's and my alma mater, Northwestern. Those 2 years helped those guys mature quite a bit, and they also got a lot of good competition. So I think college tennis is a really fertile ground. I think it is popular. And I having played varsity tennis, I wouldn't trade it for the world. Not that I was good enough to go pro, mind you. I never was. But I certainly got a good education.
So yeah. Keith, to the excitement issue, I mean, everybody looks at the Grand Slams in tennis and sees, you know, the finals are full. But you also, if you watch the Tennis Channel on the early round of almost any tournament, there's not a lot of folks there. So, I mean, the top parts of college tennis do have a very strong fan base. But we also need to remember, to this point, there is a place for everyone. Division I at the top really is almost like the equivalent of those that can play pros. But if you go to a Division III school, and for someone who doesn't know that, those are not just smaller schools, but they're fantastic academic schools, whether it's Emory or Williams. Students are going there not only for the education, but really to participate. And when we think about tennis being a sport of a lifetime, yes, fans in the stands is one thing, but actually developing a love of the game that's going to last till you're playing in the 90s is, I think, one of the great benefits of our sport.
Yeah, agreed.
And John Lloyd has said that a number of times. In fact, there's a book about tennis, you know, up until old age and beyond and so forth. I'd like to get the author on here. But it is true, tennis is a sport that you can play forever, basically. But in terms of the popularity, is it growing because of the fact that now you have a situation where the top players, or you advise the players and the best players to start the collegiate system first? Is the fan base growing?
The fan base is growing. I think one of the other things the ITA has tried to do the last couple of years is to put our top national championships on TV. So the ITA actually hosted our All-American Championships and our Fall National Championships on ESPN. So I think we're trying to build the fan base, but it's tough. I think to your point, one of the things we're trying to do is emulate some of the paths that things like women's softball and baseball did. I mean, we've always had football and basketball, but how do we get the other sports to actually grow in popularity? So I think we're on the right trajectory.
Yeah.
And how are you going about doing that, guys?
So I don't want to monopolize this, but I'll tell you that one of the things we've tried to do over the last number of years is to grow our championship. So the ITA is not only in charge of rules, rankings, officials, and awards, but we actually were one of the only coaches association that puts on a series of championships. So we have 88 regional championships around the country for all five divisions, which actually builds the popularity not only for the players there, but for the fan base. And then they funnel up to a series of 10 ITA national championships. And the very top level, we're actually trying to put on TV. And I'll toss it back to John to say we're also trying to partner with the USTA. So, for example, last year, the NCAA Division I was hosted at the new national campus of the USTA, and they had 2 weeks in a row, both the team and the individual singles and doubles were on the tennis channel. So those are the kind of things we're all trying to do to promote the sport.
Yep. Some other things we're trying to do are to create more and bigger events. So, for example, there's been some discussion with the USTA about the possibility of having D1, D2, and D3 toward the end of those draws, all be, say, at the national campus or some other site. But I will tell you, it did work out very well at the national campus last year. And that was all covered with TV. We have a wonderful men's team indoors and a women's team indoors, which are in back-to-back weeks. We're looking at the possibility of combining those events during the same week and creating, you know, a lot of excitement, perhaps doing Hall of Fame events then as well. And so it just makes it more like a festival and creates more excitement, gets more media coverage. I will tell you that even in Chicago, it's very tough to get tennis coverage here in the newspapers and on television. It's, you know, it's a basketball, football, hockey kind of town and a baseball town. So we're up against that. So sometimes you have to create that excitement.
The other thing that's going on at a school-wide level is streaming. So whether it's an individual school's facility or using a product like PlaySight, we're trying to actually stream individual matches. So let's say your child is from London and your child's from Tel Aviv but plays in a U.S. college. If you can watch your son and daughter play the matches on a streaming product, that's been something that's really been growing our sport as well.
Well, definitely technology is the way forward. And from what you're saying, the Tennis Channel are also playing some of your matches. Do they have a lot of coverage of college tennis on the Tennis Channel?
It's starting to grow. I mean, obviously, they, like everybody else, are trying to figure out how you make a sustainable business model. The USTA, for example, at the national campus spent almost $2 million to actually build a Tennis Channel studio. So when we do our fall championships at the national campus come November, we will partner with that studio. The USTA also had a series of what they called College Match Day. So I wouldn't say that the Tennis Channel does a lot, but I think much like the Golf Channel, they've started to see that there's actually a good following for sports. One of the things we're trying to do in terms of growing the sport, I think there's several ways to do it. One is to turn tennis fans into college tennis fans. The other is to take intercollegiate sports fans and turn them into college tennis fans. So, for example, if you follow Ohio State football or Texas football, you should know that Ohio State and Texas also have great college tennis teams. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to approach it from two different directions there. We very much are conscious of the question you're asking. Actually, Keith and John, if you looked on our ITA website, our mission talks about not only growing the visibility of college tennis, but telling the stories and raising the profile. So the essence of your question is what we're coming to work every day to do.
Well, all I was just talking about, you know, that it's on the Tennis Channel a little bit. I have to tell you, every year at Indian Wells, and not this year, unfortunately, because of the Indian Wells tournament was cancelled due to the pandemic. But during the last weekend of the tournament, they have college matches going on the back courts.
Yes.
And I always wander out there. I do some clinics out there and I watch them, and I'm watching with a few people. And we're amazed at the standard of how good the tennis is. And it's quite funny because you'll be on the court about four courts away from the college matches, and you'll hear all this shouting, and all the players on each court are screaming, you know, like, go, you know, US or whatever the chant is for their team. Even when they're playing on court seven, they're chanting for their player on court five. And there's this great team spirit. And you wander down the courts. There's about, I suppose, six courts, seven courts, all with college matches. And the standard is quite amazing. And when you're standing with someone, they're watching it. And I can see them thinking, well, you know, why the heck aren't these people on the tour already? And you know, and I say to them, well, because they haven't fully yet learned their craft, but they're learning. Because the standard looks so good. And actually, the way they strike the ball, I mean, it's quite amazing. And you think of how many hundreds of them are out there, or thousands at the colleges playing. And it's such good standard. And I think if we got more of it on the TV, you'd get a very good fan base, because it's really exceptional tennis to watch and a lot of fun.
I was going to say that John's reference to the BNP, Our biggest sponsor has been Oracle, and obviously Larry Ellison owns the BNP, and Mark Hurd, the former CEO, was a great fan of college tennis, and they hosted an Oracle Collegiate Challenge there. But to John Loyne's point about some of the fans going, why shouldn't they be on the tour? The very top players are really playing pro events. I'll give you one example where there was $150,000 challenger in Columbus, Ohio, and Mikkel Torpegaard, who was the number one player not only at Ohio State but in college tennis, actually ended up winning that event. You know, so these are players who actually can play with the pros, and now Mikkel's having a good pro career. Or you look at somebody like J.J. Wolf, was our top-ranked player who went to Ohio State and is now actually, I think, ranked in the top 150 in the world. So the level is right there.
Yeah, amazing. Great tennis.
Guys, I one thing I want to ask you, because I have to hold my hands up and say that I don't watch Cornish tennis. I apologize. Being a Brit, we don't get to see it. But the rules are slightly different, aren't they, in terms of the points? And there's a few differences between that and the pro. Can you tell us what they are?
Sure. And just back to our technology, if you go on some of the streaming, you should be able to watch college tennis from where you are. But some of the differences include that we've gone back to what used to happen, where at Division I and II, we're actually playing no ad scoring. So we still play best of three sets, but it's no ad. So to John Lloyd's point about learning to play under pressure, those no ad points really become critically important. A next major factor is that you can actually get coached, and not just in between games or in between sets. Theoretically, commonly do that, but I mean, you could have a micromanaging coach who could tell John Lloyd to serve to John Bogosian's forehand on a critical point. So you've got on-court coaching regularly.
I love it.
But we also have the men actually don't play lets. So if the ball hits the net on the serve, you still play it. And sadly, that is not one of the rules that I'm a big fan of, because it kind of came about to actually be as a response to too much cheating. We had people who were actually serving aces, and their opponents would yell let when it wasn't a let. So our coaches finally voted that you would actually play the let. So those would probably be three of the biggest things that if you were coming to a college match that you would see.
The other thing you would see, back when I was playing, you'd play your six singles and then three doubles. And now what happens is you play your three doubles first, and instead of them being two out of three sets, it's basically a set. Correct, Tim?
And it is.
And they all play simultaneously for 1 point instead of for 3 points. And so that doubles point can be very important. So if you're up 1-0 in the doubles, now you only have to win three of the singles. But if you lose it, you got to win four of the singles. So that can make it quite exciting. And part of the reason for these changes was because matches could go 4 or 5 hours when you had two out of three sets in singles and two out of three sets in doubles. And administrators were concerned that it was interfering with student athletes' ability to study. But I actually think this is a new and improved format for college tennis, and I think it makes it more thrilling.
It's not only new and improved for the athletes, but to Keith's continuing interest in promoting fan interest, we now know that in society, people are really going to sit for a 4 or 5 hour sporting event, maybe for Fed playing, you know, Nadal or something. But we now average 2.5 hours for a match, which is the same as women's softball and the like. And we think that's a fairly doable time frame for people to come and sit at a college tennis match.
And John Lloyd, yeah, you're always saying about how we should shorten the matches in the pro game.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons, apart from my work there, but why I'm such a big fan of world team tennis. It's the same thing. It's the match is started and finished in basically 2.5 hours. And I think, you know, these days we're competing with so many different sports, and you know, the days, unfortunately, of 4 to 5 hours of people watching, and their attention span is diminishing rapidly. And I know everyone says, yeah, but what are those about those epic 5-set matches? But yeah, I believe that you can have an epic best of 3-set match and still be the same thing. It's only because people remember it because the games are long and it goes down to a fifth. But if you shorten even Grand Slams to best of 3 sets, it wouldn't take long before people were talking about epic 3-set matches and not just the 5 sets. People these days don't have an attention span long enough to go past 2.5, 3 hours. It's silly. And if we want to compete in with the major sports, I think the 2.5-hour, 3-hour window is about the perfect amount of for any sport, and particularly tennis.
Yeah, so if you're watching a college dual match, as John Bogosian said, started with 3 doubles, so one team gets 1 point, and now they've played through until it's 3-all, and you're down to the last match in the third set. It can get down to a tiebreaker, and let's say we've got those 5,000 people at the University of Georgia or at the national campus. I can tell you it's about as thrilling as it gets, and that's the point when the match is had, when you're going to see all the teammates run and jump on the winning player. I'm getting goosebumps just telling you about it. So John Lloyd's got it spot on.
Look, I've got to tell you, I think that from what John Lloyd was saying about Indian Wells, it makes sense that college tennis could be played as a side issue, but albeit to promote the sport, at pro tournaments, because one of the things that you know, the biggest sport in the world is football. And one of the things that we grow up in here in the UK, I mean, I've got a 7-year-old who's mad on football. And he loves the team that I've supported all my life. I don't know if you know, guys know, but Arsenal is the name of the team. And it seems to invoke such emotion. Team sports invokes emotion, which is, I think, an area that if tennis went down, and maybe the collegiate route is the way it happens, because I've seen it on American football and on basketball, the fervour for those teams and colleges that they root for. That it just seems to me that the excitement that's created from that fervour is an excellent way to promote the game of tennis.
Yeah.
No question about it. And for a while, the US Open did have some college matches. And then there was also one in Australia, I think the year before last, Tim, correct? You were there, actually.
That's right. We took two USCs. University of Southern California and University of South Carolina played the first ever college dual match at the Australian Open. I think everybody knows that Craig Tiley was a college coach at the University of Illinois and now is in charge of Tennis Australia, and he invited those two teams down. But to your very creative thinking, Keith, the other kind of stuff we try to do in the fall, even when there is American college football, we try to have college matches earlier in the day on Saturday. So if there's 50,000 people showing up at a match on their way in, they can actually stop at the at the tennis courts. We're trying to continue to find ways to get those non-tennis people to see how exciting college tennis is.
I think that sounds amazing. I mean, I don't know what John Lloyd, I mean, that just sounds like the perfect way. We've talked about how to make tennis more exciting. Of course, we've talked about the slightly dull way the players play today, in a way, because of the lack of variety in coming to the net and the beautiful touch at the net. But it seems to me that you guys, and I'm not just saying it to butter you up, it just seems to me that you guys seem to be planning and going down the right way to bring in new fans, because it just seems to me if you create that fervour, you're gonna create excitement around the sport. What do you think, John? John Lloyd, of course.
Well, no, I agree. I think it's the way to go. I think I think this type of stuff and team games. I mean, as I say, I'm going to go back to team tennis again, but which I'm involved with. But there's something about it. It's Davis Cups, you know, Fed Cups for the women. You know, people and fans do love team games. They do love it. They do that. They love that kind of that atmosphere and shortened matches and you know. I think tennis misses out on so many things. You touched on it earlier on about, or someone did, about, you know, that you can play tennis till you're 90. That to me is one of the big key things that we don't promote in tennis, is that it is one of the only sports that you can play for life. It really is. When you look at it, I mean, okay, you can play golf for life as well, but you don't really get too much cardiovascular help with golf or benefit, unless you, of course, walk the course, which not many people do. But tennis, you can play forever. And I don't think we promote that enough. I don't think we promote that to people out there and that would love this game if we got them in it. The trouble is that tennis is a very difficult game to learn. That's the problem. When we get so many people that take up the sport, get excited when they watch the big Grand Slams and so on, and then they give it up very quickly because they don't have adequate coaching. And tennis is a tough game to learn. And that's the other thing we need to do, is to get better teaching at local parks and places to encourage people to play and stick with it. Because once you stick with it, it's the greatest sport in the world, I think.
John, let me build on a couple of things that you have said and that Tim has said. In terms of getting people into the game, yes, it has been difficult, but back during the time I was on the board and USTA president, we rolled out something called 10 and Under Tennis, where we developed shorter rackets, softer balls, smaller courts, so that it would be easier and more fun for kids to get into the game. And that's now called Net Generation, and that has even social media aspects to it. So I think the USTA is doing a lot to try and promote that. ITA has worked with the USTA on that by trying to have events on college campuses. And Tim was talking about, for example, you try and get people coming from before a football game, you get them involved. Another thing to do is to try and get the communities involved in each of the college towns. And we encourage coaches to do that, to say, you know, have underprivileged kids come over, expose them to the sport. And a lot of colleges and universities are doing that and becoming part of the fabric of their communities. And I think that's another important way to promote the game and perhaps get some people excited about the sport who might not otherwise have opportunities. So I do think there are things that we can do. And college tennis, if you think about it, really is the linchpin of tennis in this country, because it's an important pathway from the juniors up to the pros. And, you know, if you didn't have the aspiration of college tennis, how many parents might put their kid into the sport of tennis? And I think having that opportunity is really important.
Yeah.
Say, one of the guys we had on here wanted to go to college. And I don't know quite what happened. I can't remember what happened, but I think it was to do with the coaching that was made available to him. He went to the sort of slightly more privileged few and he gave up the game.
Yeah.
Tim, yeah. You were going to say something.
Well, I was just going to connect the thoughts that both Johns had here, where one of the things college coaches do a lot is actually run camps, especially in the summer, but a number of them actually run academies year-round. So to John Lloyd's point of actually a tough game to learn, There's also kind of the aspirational thing where young American juniors can actually see the college players practicing at the same facility. So we actually are trying to integrate this pathway through college tennis.
Yeah. I'd like Tim to talk about something else we just started this summer, and we're hoping that it will succeed and we can build on it. But it's called Tennis for America, and it's a Peace Corps kind of program. Tim, why don't you take it from here and share about it?
Yeah, thanks, John. If you follow America and you think about things like a program called Teach for America or the Peace Corps or Habitat for Humanity, there's a commitment on the part of General Stanley McChrystal and a guy named John Bridgeland, who played college tennis at Harvard, to actually have up to 1 million young people graduate from college, and then after they graduate, give back a year of public service to America. And we're trying to demonstrate how sports can be the first leaders in this new initiative. So we've just launched a program with four partners around the United States. One, the Sloan Stephens Foundation in LA, XS Tennis, which is run by Kamau Murray, Sloan Stephens' coach, and then the Junior Tennis Champions Center that Ray Benton runs in College Park, and then the NYJTL and the Carey Lead Center in New York City. So we've just placed 8 recent college graduates to work at these facilities and hope to share not only their love of tennis, but an educational component as mentors in underserved communities. So we're very excited about what we think could be a transformational initiative.
Yeah. I mean, if this takes off and we get hundreds of kids doing this every year after they graduate, think about the impact that they can have on youngsters and get them excited about the sport.
I mean, it's ultimately all about a pyramid from the bottom all the way up to the, you know, top 10 players. If you think about, we use guys like Isner again. John Isner was an okay junior, got better in college, and then by the time he'd been in the pros. But we still just need to build the bottom of the pyramid as well. And the ITA, while we're focusing on that college tennis point, we really are trying to be sensitive to how we can not only be a leader in intercollegiate athletics, but in the world of tennis.
Yeah, I have to say, guys, I mean, I'm sure John Lloyd agrees with me, but you guys have a real sense of enthusiasm for building the game. And that just comes through. And of course, with that kind of enthusiasm and what you're doing with college tennis, it has to have a beneficial effect for the game across America. I mean, look, we've discussed it on here again before. The women's seem to be doing pretty good in America in the pros. In the men, not so good. But some of the initiatives you're talking about, perhaps you're going to be looking in the next few years at a situation like what you had in the 80s when you had McEnroe and Connors, who came through the college system, I believe, and became number one in the world.
Well, we will hope, because I think a guy like Steve Johnson didn't quite make the top 10, but Stevie won, you know, 4 team championships and individual championships. We've got people like Isner. But the other thing I'll point out back to the pro game, which goes a little unnoticed, and you mentioned earlier, and I didn't want to interrupt, Keith, when you talked about people coming to the net. If you actually do a little survey and study of how many of the doubles players at the Grand Slams went to college, that's actually where we have a very large mark on college tennis on the pro game right now, is in the doubles realm.
Yeah. Another thing about college tennis players that I think is important to mention is that 2 of the icons of the 20th century for social movements played varsity tennis, Arthur Ashe and Billie Jean King. And you know, they're very smart people. They use their platforms. And I think their college tennis experiences were formative for them. I would also say the same thing about Stan Smith, who's given back tremendously to the sport and to society. And so those formative years, I think, are great examples. And if parents are looking for role models, I don't think you can get better than that.
Yeah. Stan Smith and Arthur Ashe not only won Grand Slams, but were college graduates. And then Sloan Stephens has won a Grand Slam. And most people don't know, actually went back and actually got a college degree. So, you know, we've had a lot of people who've gone to college, not finished, and gone on to good careers. But Billie Jean and Arthur and Stan have also been incredibly generous with the ITA. We actually have awards that they're associated with as well. One of the things we like to say ultimately about college tennis is that we like to help develop championship human beings on and off the court.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to say, you know, I look back at it now and I think to myself, I would have loved to have gone to American college and played. I would have loved it too, because the standard of coaching is very high as well. I know quite a few of the coaches. I've watched them work. Some are ex-players, obviously, as well. But to be in that environment where you would, you know, I wasn't the best student, but if I'd have known I was going to play tennis afterwards for 2 hours and be in a team, or 2 or 3 hours every day, and be in a team a situation, I'm sure I would have done a lot better than I did. But to have got that tennis day in, day out, and be, you know, in the team and travel and all that stuff, what a perfect way to start a career. And if you don't make it, you know, you've got something to fall back on, because that is one of the big things about tennis players that who try and make it, who go into the futures and challengers, and basically speaking, who have left school early, they only have really one choice, and that is to go into coaching afterwards, which I'm not saying is bad, but you're sort of limiting yourself, because, you know, without any qualifications that you would get from an education, you're certainly limiting your chances of success in the business world. And if you don't make it on the circuit, you know, you would, generally speaking, go into coaching. And that would be something that a lot of players do, and they love it, but some of them are almost forced into it. And if you could, with college, you can get the perfect combination. And I think it's a great thing. I recommend a lot of people to do that. And I certainly keep on recommending, because I think it's the way to go.
So, John, you're spot on. Not only are college tennis players routinely really good people and have high GPAs, we've done a few studies to show that we actually have a very high percentage of people who go on to get not only master's degrees and PhDs, but JDs and MDs. And there's an incredibly large number of CEOs and CFOs and CMOs who've actually played college tennis, in addition to people who are artists and teachers. So the idea of having this great array of opportunities following your college tennis career is spot on.
Yeah.
And if you look at the leaders of the USTA, a number of them have played college tennis. Patrick Galbraith is president now. He played. Mm-hmm. Katrina Adams played. Dave Haggerty played. I played. Alan Schwartz did, so did Franklin Johnson. All had very successful collegiate careers, but also we all got outstanding educations. Yeah. And so I think that's just a testament to what we're talking about.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, I've got to tell you, I you've got me hooked, and I haven't even watched a match yet. I honestly want to start following college tennis. But interestingly enough, I knew a guy who won the college title last year. He is from Israel, a guy called Bar Botzer. I don't know if you know him.
And yeah, plays at Wake Forest.
Sorry? That's right. Yeah,
he
won
Wake
last year.
Forest.
And we were going to get him on here. I don't know quite what happened. I lost a bit of contact with him. But I just wanted to ask you quickly. I mean, obviously we've seen the McEnroes and the Connors come through. Do you think that we're looking at a situation with the continuing growth of intercollegiate tennis that we will start seeing some really, really top singles players come through?
It's still going to be tough, because different people around the world approach things differently. I mean, we now have players from all around the world who are coming, but there are still a lot of federations who are encouraging their players to take the, you know, the pro route. I mean, it's a tough question. I clearly think we could. I mean, Danielle Collins has made, you know, top 20. She won the NCAA twice. But I know that there's a couple different pathways, and there's still some federations that they're going to recommend. While I'm hearing over and over John Lloyd saying that he's recommending people, you know, for others, if you are somebody who's played, you know, in the 14s and under and the 16 and unders and won all the championships, you know, whether you're Federer or Wawrinka or whatever, Nadal, there's still going to be that pathway. So I think we're going to get more top pros from college, but there's still going to be some that come from a traditional non-college pathway.
Got me hooked. John Lloyd was already a big advocate, and I'm sure people listening will start taking greater interest. Is there an app or something that I can download on my phone? Is there an NCAA app or something like that?
So itatennis.com is a mobile website. So it actually functions like an app. And then during our tournaments, they all link to an app. And we often use a thing called the tennis ticker, where you can follow our matches online. But literally, if on your phone, any web browser, you put itatennis.com, it'll function like a browser. You'll get the best news of the day. You can connect to the scores of the day. It's not an app that you would load off of the Google Play Store or the App Play Store, but it functions like one.
And we also have wearecollegetennis.com for computers, right?
Those two will link you to the same thing. That's right.
Well, look, Tim, John, it's been really great to have you on. And I know John Lloyd, like I said, is always advocating the college route. Yeah, hopefully we can do this again, because I think this is a part of tennis that seems to me, certainly in this country, and I'm probably, I don't know if I'm correct, but probably in the States as well, you've got a way to go. But it seems to me that this is the way to go. I think you can definitely create a tremendous amount of interest wherever tennis fans are. I want to thank you guys for coming on. I really do.
And, it's been a pleasure.
We'll be in touch. And, yeah, best of luck for the future. Obviously, keep safe at these times. Hopefully we'll be seeing each other in the flesh, I hope, very soon.
Well, Keith and John, thank you both very much for having Tim and me on today. It was great to have this conversation with you. And thank you for promoting college tennis in particular and tennis in general. It's great.
Well,
all right.
Listen, I love the game. You know that. And obviously, as I always say, John's the man. I'm just the fan. But there you have it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks
all so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
They've really got me interested. I actually want to follow it more.
Yeah, it's pretty damn exciting, I tell you. When you go, you know, you watch it as that Indian Wells, and you're with friends who know tennis but don't know it that much, and they're looking at it and going, well, how come these guys aren't on the tour? Because they hit the crap out of the ball. And I said, well, it's just a few things here and there, but the standards are unbelievable. They really are. I mean, it's incredible.
John, what are the major differences between the top college players and the guys and girls on the tour?
Well, I say some of them are already starting to play in the challenges and getting through. Some of them, the rest of them, it's just playing big points. It's you know, not choking on, you know. And that's why they're at college. But do they have the games to translate? And you look at them, and I watch them, and I think, God. But I don't know them mentally. I don't know what they are like, you know, in off the court, and what they really are during big points. You know, you just come along and you watch, and it looks very flashy, but you don't know how good they really are. You know, but a lot of them are starting to make it now and coming through. And I think it's a great thing to do. If I was a British player now, it would be very high on my, you know, be 10. Cameron Norrie, of course, we didn't talk about him. He came from college a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, and has done pretty damn well. Top 50 now.
Well, John, it's been great again this week. Very informative, and look forward to doing it all again next week. Thanks again for listening. Please remember to press that subscribe button and share with all your friends. You can also follow us on Twitter, RNR_tennis. And of course on Instagram, rock'n'roll_tennis. And please leave us a review. We'd love to hear your comments. We will, of course, see you next week as always. Thanks so much again.